Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The research now says when you increase omega-3s in the diet, provided that they're not damaged and don't contain toxins, you can improve virtually every major degenerative condition of our time. I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name. What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's episode, we have got on one of the world's leading experts on dietary fat. He is the author of the book, Fats That Heal, Fats That Kill, and he is also the co-founder of the nutrition and supplement company called Udo's Choice. And this is Dr. Udo Erasmus. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, glad to be on.
Udo, I have done a brief intro right there, but for people who are not familiar with you and your story, please introduce yourself.
Well, I was born during the Second World War in Poland when it was part of Germany. And I was a refugee kid when I was 2 years old, fleeing from the communists who were chasing us in tanks and trucks, down dirt roads on horse-drawn hay wagons, mothers with young children, no military presence. And the allies, the good guys, the guys we like to think of as the good guys, were using us as target practice. They were shooting us from planes. And long story, I had a tough childhood. And I never knew what I could trust and what I could depend on and what's true, and never felt safe. And so I was always trying to figure out how things work. Because when you know how things work, it gives you some predictability. And it gives you some security. So I got into science to figure out how things work. Then I got into biosciences to figure out how creatures work. And then I got into psychology to figure out how thinking works. Then I took a year of medicine because I thought I would learn about health there, but they only teach about disease. So I ended up back in biochemistry and genetics. And then I left university because there were still things I was looking for that I wasn't finding at university. And I got married and we had three kids and my marriage broke up because there were some things I didn't know about relationships. I was really upset, and I got a job as a pesticide sprayer. I had gotten a license as a pesticide sprayer on another job. Took a full-time job as a pesticide sprayer, sprayed them really carelessly for 3 years, and got poisoned by pesticides. Went to the doctor, said, "What do you have for pesticide poisoning?" And she said, "Nothing." And that day, the penny dropped. Oh my God, my health really is my responsibility. And so because I had the background, I started looking at, well, how do you fix it? You know, and I knew that your body turns over. 98% of the atoms in your body today, Zuby, if we meet a year from now, all those atoms will have been removed and replaced. And you won't even have noticed, and nobody will have noticed. You still have the same name, and you still have the same personality, but your body is almost completely new. Well, that's why healing is possible, because the body is a construction site. It's a major construction site, always under construction. So that means if you've done something and your health has suffered, then you need to raise your standard of intake of food, water, and air, and within 1 year, you will have rebuilt 98% of your body to a higher standard. In other words, to better health. Well, I kind of knew that. So I was going through the literature about nutrition and health, nutrition and disease, because, you know, I wasn't thinking about air and water at that point. I was just thinking about nutrition. And so I was looking at everything that I could get my hands on that had to do with health. And found out, of course, there's 18 essential minerals, there's 13 essential vitamins, there's 9 essential amino acids that come from protein, and there are 2 essential fatty acids that come from oils. And all of those essential means you can't make it in your body from anything else. You have to have it to live and be healthy. So you have to bring it in from outside, food or supplement. And the area I got stuck in was the area of fats because it was contradictory. You know, I read a study that says omega-6 is an essential nutrient. You can't make it. You got to have it. You got to get it from outside. If you don't get enough long enough, you die. But if you bring it back in adequate quantities while your health is deteriorating, then all the problems that come from not getting enough are reversed, because life knows how to make the body if we take responsibility here at our mouth to make sure that all of the essential building blocks land in the body, right? So, yep. And so at that point, only omega-6 was established as an essential nutrient, not omega-3. This is 1980 when I got poisoned. 1981, I was in the research looking for all this stuff. And I found out omega-3 is an essential nutrient. And 99% of the population doesn't get enough omega-3 for optimum health. And every cell needs them. So there must
when be... Just to jump in there, when you say 99% of the population, where is that? Is that worldwide or is that in the USA?
Well, the numbers are mostly from the US because the nobody's doing studies on worldwide numbers in that detail. So it was probably more Western world. So would it probably Europe and US, Canada, probably New Zealand and Australia as well. So that world. And so it's the most widespread essential nutrient deficiency of our time, followed by vitamin D 80% and magnesium 80% and maybe vitamin B6 80%, and then zinc 50-60%, and pretty much every essential nutrient. There's a percentage of the population that isn't getting enough of it. The other thing I found out is, I started telling you a story. Okay, so omega-6 is an essential nutrient. You got to have it, can't make it, got to get it from outside. And the very next study I read, it says omega-6 gives you cancer and kills you. And my head exploded. It's like, wait, I have to have it and then it kills me. It's essential and then it kills me. It's like, I must be missing something. There must be something else going on. And it was that contradiction, trying to figure it out, that made me look deeper and found out that when the industry makes oils the way they do, they treat them with harsh chemicals and then they bleach them and then they heat them to frying temperature to clean them up. And that's to get a long shelf life. When they do that, about 0.5% to 1% of the molecules of the oil are damaged, changed from something natural that life knows how to deal with in your body to something unnatural that never existed in nature, that life never made a breakdown program for. And then when you put that in your body, then wherever a molecule that is unnatural goes, it will interfere with what's going on in the space that it occupies, right? Because that's how it works. Everything is in flux and everything is moving around and every molecule has a function, has a structure, has a function. And so, and then I thought, well, gee, we shouldn't be making oils like that. So I called the Oil Chemist Society and said, I want to talk to a researcher. So they put him on the line. I said, hey, when you know that this does damage to the oils, why do you do that? And he said, well, one of the reasons we do that is because when we heat the oil to frying temperature, the process called deodorization, well, we can get rid of half of the pesticides that are in the oil. And my head exploded again. And I was like, wait, the other half of the pesticide stays in the oil? I didn't even know there were pesticides in oils, right? And so I said to him, I didn't say that to him, but I said to him, well, why don't you start with organically grown seeds? Then you don't have a pesticide problem to deal with. And he was really quiet. I waited. It seemed like a long time. And then he came back and he was, oh, what the hell is your problem? The oil is only 1% damaged. It's 99% good. And if you got 99% on the exam, you'd be damn happy, wouldn't you? So it's like he really, and then I backed off. I said, well, maybe I'm overreacting. It's only 1%. So I said, okay, when I finished the conversation. I said, okay, well, how do I figure it out? So, okay, well, in doubt, do the math. So my question was, if I have a tablespoon of an oil that is 1% damaged, how many damaged molecules are going to be in that tablespoon of oil? And I want to ask you that question because there's a reason why I do this. It's kind of cool. So
you're asking me?
You have a tablespoon of oil that's 1% damaged. How many damaged molecules are going to be in that tablespoon?
Wow. Quintillions?
Well, you
more than trillions. Huge numbers. Like stupid number. Like infinite, like more zeros than I can fathom.
So you may already have heard that because you're the first person who's come close to estimating the right number in 45 years.
What's the actual number?
60 quintillion.
60 most, quintillion. Okay.
Yeah, most people, when they guess at least a billion times too low.
Okay. Yeah.
And the reason why I do this is because when people give me their numbers and they're way too low, basically we're doing something to ourselves and we're underestimating by at least a billion times how much damage we're introducing into our body. And would that, when we know that, would that be cause to think about oils and what we do with them and how we use them and what we should get to keep us healthy? But it's a huge number. So it's how much is that in one tablespoon? More than a million damaged molecules for every one of your body's 60 trillion cells. And we don't eat just eat one tablespoon. Most people 2 to 4. So you got to multiply that in. Then we fry them. So you got to multiply that number by another 3 to 6 times. Then you have pesticides in the oil and you have plastic in the oil because they're all packaged in plastic, right? And then you do that for 30 years. So now you got to multiply that number by another 11,000 because that's about the number of days in 30 years. And then you have to say, oh my God, if I'm still alive and I'm not completely wrecked after doing that to myself for 30 years, holy smokes. You know, and then you say, okay, well, maybe we should make oils with health in mind. That was my conclusion. I said, I can't get healthy on oils like this. We should make them with health in mind.
Let me jump in here right now. So I have a question because, you know, people are hearing these huge numbers, quintillions. These are numbers people can't even fathom in their brains.
Yeah, 19 zeros, a 6 followed by 19 zeros. I count them.
Yeah, I think, you know, whether it's 16 zeros or 17 or 18 or 19, past a certain number, it just becomes too hard for the mind. I think what would be good for listeners to know is what is the actual impact of that on the body? Because most people will be thinking, well, I've been consuming various types of these oils my entire life and I'm 30, 40, 50, 60, however many years old, and I seem to be okay. I'm still alive. So what do those oils actually do to the body?
Well, they interfere with everything. Wherever they go, they mess it up. They change gene expression. Let me answer the question backwards. The research now, it wasn't done when I started, but the research now says, when you increase omega-3s in the diet, provided that they're not damaged and don't contain toxins, you can improve virtually every major degenerative condition of our time. And to the extent that omega-3s improve those conditions, to that extent, they had to be caused by omega-3 deficiency, because omega-3 will only fix what lack of omega-3 causes. Right? And so you fundamentally, everything goes wrong. Every cell needs them. You know, your hormones don't work as well. Your energy isn't as high. With athletes, we get 40 to 60% increase in stamina if they take a tablespoon of an oil blend that we put together where omega-3s and 6s are both made with health in mind and in the right ratio. 40 to 60% increase in stamina in their sport if they do it to exhaustion within 30 days of doing that. That's huge. There's no training program that gets you those kind of gains in 30 days. Not a single one, right?
No, that's massive. Okay, go ahead. Sorry, carry
on. And it's only because there's one essential nutrient that most people are not getting enough of. right?
So what does omega-3 do for the body? I know a lot of people would have heard of omega-6. Yeah. They would have heard of omega-3, but yeah. The typical person is not really going to be aware of why those oils are, why those fats are essential and what they actually do within the body. So why is omega-3 deficiency so horrible?
Yeah, well, they're stored in the membranes that surround our cells. And the membranes decide what goes in and into the cells and what comes out of the cells. They make hormones work more effectively at the cell receptor level. They increase oxygen metabolism and oxidation rate and energy production. In fact, I call them the fat-burning fire starter. They turn on the genes for fat burning in the body, and they turn off the gene for fat production. So that you, if you use omega-3s as fuel instead of carbs, you're actually going to burn, you're going to burn body fat, extra body fat. But you have to lower the carbs at the same time, because they will override the omega-3s. It's the way the body deals with carbs and fats. So they do that. They are required for brain function. There's research that shows that they can increase IQ by 3 to 9 points. You know, we live in a complicated world. any points in IQ I can increase, I want that. Right? They make, if together, omega 3 and 6 form a barrier in the skin against the loss of moisture. So they give you soft, smooth, velvety skin. You need more in winter because more of it is burnt for heat in winter, if it's cold, than in summer. But we measure optimum intake by how the skin feels, because skin gets some last and loses some first. Because the inner organs get priority, because you can live with dry skin, but if your heart dried out, you'd be history. So nature has arranged it. So you know when you get optimum, when your skin feels soft and velvety. If you have dry skin, you need more of the right kind of oil. They're important in vision. They're important in brain function, both omega-3 and omega-6. They're super important in pregnancy, because when a woman is pregnant, she has to maintain her brain, but she's building another brain in her womb. And so she needs more of the essential fatty acids, and she has to be to convert them into other things that are required for brain development. And most women don't get enough. So the research has shown that every child depletes the mother more of her omega-3s, and each child gets less than the previous child, which is one of the reasons why the researchers think the oldest children on average are the smartest, and the youngest on average are the least smart. Because
you're talking to the youngest of five right here, so you're not making me feel great.
Yeah, no. But I am I'm the youngest of four, and I'm smarter than all my siblings. Of course, they're not here to prove me wrong, but the truth is, it's not only about omega-3s, because there are other factors involved. But if you take all the youngest kids in North America, they will have the lowest average IQ, and it's because of depletion of the mother. Now, what else they say is, okay, so the mother gets depleted. If she doesn't have enough omega-3s in her diet, then the kid will take it from her brain. And so that's how women get more depression and postpartum depression, but also chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, collagen, inflammatory autoimmune diseases. And women get those 2 to 15 times more than men do. And the researchers think it's the depletion of essential fatty acids during pregnancy that sets them up for those conditions in a way that men aren't set up, because men never get pregnant. And so they say women need to make sure they have a reliable source of both essential fatty acids, and I add to that, not damaged and not toxic, in their diet, both for their own health and for the health of their children. The essential fatty acids keep bones stronger because they inhibit the bone breakdown cells. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. The body makes out of the essential fatty acids, it makes hormone-like regulating substances that regulate what goes on in every cell in your body on a moment-to-moment basis from conception until demise. So they have huge important functions. And they're the most sensitive of our nutrients, are damaged the easiest by light, by oxygen, by heat. And we've put them in the frying pan. They should need get the most care. We throw them in the frying pan.
As I understand it, omega-3 fatty acids, omega-3 fats are ridiculously important for all stages of life, for people of all ages. Almost everybody is deficient. Only 1% of the population in the parts of the world that we live are getting enough of it. How is this all happening, and how is this information not better known? It almost seems conspiratorial at this point.
If there's something
that 99% of people are deficient in, and it has all of these massive benefits and all of these potential consequences from not having enough. Yep. So why is this not better known? In fact, it's not just not well known, but for many, many decades, for the vast majority of my life, perhaps this has changed quite significantly over the past 10 years or so, but dietary fats in general have been massively demonized. It seems like, especially in the 80s, the 90s, the early 2000s.
When I started, I started in the middle of the demonization.
Exactly. Fats have been demonized. Yep. And even just hearing the word fat, I think even in people who have nutritional knowledge, it might just be a matter of words. It might just be that the brain doesn't do a good job of separating dietary fat from body fat. So when people just hear fat, and they hear about consuming fat, or they hear about fat, dietary fat being something that burns fat, it doesn't quite process in their brains because it doesn't sound right.
And it's like eat fat, get fat. That seems like there's a logic to it, but it's not true. It's just not true. That's not how the body works. So how did that happen? Well, in the past 100 years, we have doubled our intake of omega-6, but we've decreased our intake of omega-3 to 1/6 of what people got in 1850. So this deficiency is man-made, because when the industry began, there were a couple issues. Omega-3 is 5 times more sensitive to damage than omega-6. So it's a nightmare to work with. So nobody who wants a long shelf life in a product wants to work with it. So that's one industrial issue. But then there's also that omega-3s, you find them at the North Pole and the South Pole in high quantities, because that's where it gets really cold, and that's where cold-blooded creatures like fish have to be able to get some high-energy substance that allows them to function, like escape enemies at low temperatures when their body is the same temperature as their environment. Right, so omega-3 is found at the North Pole, at the South Pole, in high quantities. And as you go south and north from the poles, then you get into an area where omega-6s predominate. Then you get into the Mediterranean area where omega-9s predominate. Then you go to the tropics where saturated fats predominate. And omega-3s are warming oils, and saturated fats are cooling oils. Right. So omega-3s increase thermogenesis. They keep you warm in winter. You burn fat for heat. Right. That's a warming oil. Well, the saturated fats are cooling. They kind of chill you. They chill you out. They actually slow down energy production or heat production. So you want more saturated fats in the tropic if you're living outside. And you want more omega-3s near the poles if you're living outside. So then the other issue is there are far fewer sources of omega-3s than omega-6s. Every oil has omega-6 in it, but only a few oils have omega-3s in them, like safflower and sunflower and corn oil have no omega-3s in them, less than 1%, right? But so it's easy to overlook if you eat seeds and nuts, you know, peanuts and almonds and pistachios and pecans, they don't have any omega-3s in them, right? So when you just eat seeds and nuts, it's harder to get them. So there's two issues. We've decreased our intake, there are fewer sources, and the industry doesn't like to work with something they have to take care of. You want shelf life, you don't want to work with omega-3s. And that's a big issue. So that's where I think that comes from. Originally, we got them from foods. A cow and horse gets omega-3s in grass. There's only 0.1% fat in grass, so it's very low in fat. But The fat in grass is 60% omega-3s and 40% omega-6. So they get more omega-3s in grass.
A lot of that makes sense. I'm trying to understand how you were comparing people now to those in 1850. And I'm trying to think of what were people eating in 1850 that was high in omega-3, which we're now no longer consuming at the same rate.
Right. So it depends on where you were, but you get some omega-3s in mustard seed or rapeseed oil or rapeseeds. Those have fallen into disfavor, except in canola oil. But canola oil is 10% omega-3, 24% omega-6. There's a little bit in soybeans. There's a little bit in walnuts. There's a little bit in hemp. There's a lot in flax and chia seeds. And in Asia, there's something called perilla, which is also very high in omega-3s. And then you find perilla is the plant that shiso comes from. Like if you eat shiso leaf with your sushi, that comes from the perilla plant. So the seed has a lot of omega-3 in it. And then there's kukui nut in the tropics. It's 30%. And psyllium seed, which in India they eat the seed. Here we only use the husk for bowel regularity. But the psyllium seed is 30% omega-3s. So every place has some sources of omega-3. They're just not in the food supply. And then when you're eating grains, have very little omega-3s in them. So we eat a lot of grain products, you know. And of course, before agriculture, we weren't grain eaters because we didn't have fields of wheat, fields of corn.
Understood. Why is... This might be an odd question, but why is omega-3 so rare in nature? There's something I heard you say in an interview I listened to once where you said something like, nature does not optimize for health. And I thought that was a really interesting sentence. And it sounds like it's somewhat connected to this. It seems strange that there's something that's so essential for our well-being and for our diets, but it's so rare and hard to find.
Well, so the rarity has to do with the climate. You know, if the climate got really cold, you know, flax, which grows in the northern temperate zones, and then, you know, and the further north you go, the more omega-3 is in the same flax plant. So if you go south, the Dakota, which is the south end of where it grows, it's maybe 45% omega-3, but you go up into halfway up Canada in Saskatchewan or Manitoba, you get 63% omega-3 in the same grain. So from 45 to almost 60%, 18% difference. So the further north you go. So that has to, it has a climate factor too. So if we get into another ice age where it gets cold further south, then omega-3s will grow further south. And you get more omega-3s in what grows further south. So that's one issue. But the thing about the body, you know, nature's mandate is not optimum health. Well, you know, people argue. So like, oh, well, we should just eat whole foods and then, you know, we'll be optimally healthy. No, nature doesn't need you optimally healthy. It needs you healthy enough to grow up, needs you healthy enough to reproduce, needs you healthy enough to take care of your kids till they don't need you anymore. And when your kids don't need you anymore, nature doesn't need you anymore. So then it's recycling time, you know, from nature's perspective. And how do you make sure that people are recycled when their kids are grown? Well, you never have them optimally healthy in the first place. And then as the machinery slows down, the biochemical machinery slows down as you get older, then you get recycled earlier. And there was a time when most adults lived on an average of 34 years, 40 years.
I also understand that was largely skewed because so many people died so early because the infant mortality rate was so high. My understanding on that statistic is that if people made it to 4 or 5 years old, then the probability that they'd live to, you know, 60 years plus was actually pretty high.
That's also true to some extent. There's definitely people who made it through childhood. There definitely were some very people who lived very long and very old. But if you look at like all the famous people that you study, they usually checked out in their 60s, 50s, 60s. 70 was hard, 80 was, but there were some people who did. And
yeah, for sure.
What is that based on? Well, it's based on genetics, but it's also based on lifestyle habits.
Absolutely.
And the people who have done best in health are the people who eat whole foods, not white flour, not white sugar, not white oils, you know, but they ate whole foods and then they were physically active and they had social connections, you know, and all of that. So yeah, there are a lot of factors in that. But the idea that nature's mandate is optimum health, I just had to question it because it didn't make sense to me. And I then tried to get all my oils from just eating flax, sunflower, and sesame seeds to get the omega-3s and 6s right, like we have it in the blend, right? And within 3 months in California, in summer, where I need less oil, my skin was getting dry. I could not keep my skin from getting dry. So I couldn't get enough from just eating seeds. And that was always the argument. Why do you make oil? Why don't you just eat the seeds? So like, because I need more than that. Some people might be able to do it just on seeds. I can't. Right. So I'm just going with what's working. For me, it's just a practical issue.
I hear that. I have a massive question. Pardon the pun when I say massive, but what is going on, not just in the USA and across the West, but in terms of the overweight and the obesity rates? Every year, these numbers are just going up and up and up. I mean, the obesity rate has gone from under 10% not so long ago to now being around 40% in the USA, for example.
Yeah.
And it's not even the fattest country in the world. And I believe the percentage of people who are overweight or obese is now over 70%. And, you know, as much as people would like to cope and pretend that this is because there's all these bodybuilders and powerlifters out there, that's not really the case.
are the only healthy overweight people, as Arnold and his crew.
So what exactly? Look, everyone's got their. Some of it is obvious, and we've touched on some of it, but it certainly seems like there is something a little bit more hidden and less obvious, perhaps, that has been going on in modern Western diets, which has just led to this massive continuous rise in obesity. So what is your analysis on that?
Okay, so there are two reasons why people get overweight. Well, three if you include Arnold, but there are two reasons why people become overweight and obese. One is inflammation, which leads to water retention. And the other is eating more carbs than you burn. And when you eat more carbs than you burn, especially when you eat them in a refined form where they're absorbed very quickly, your body, to protect itself, will turn excess carbs that you don't burn into fats for storage. And that mechanism was good during times when there were feasts and famines, but now we have no famines. So your body stores the fat. If you had a famine, then the overweight people would survive longer than skinny people. But we don't get the famines. So we eat, we get overeat. And then, of course, there are social factors as well. Like, when I'm depressed, you know, sometimes food is my only friend. And then I'm eating for psychological reasons. I'm not eating when I'm hungry, and I'm not stopping eating when the hunger's gone. That's what we're supposed to do, right? But I'm eating because food is my friend, and it's a nice entertainment, and it's like it feels good, and I like the taste, and I like the texture, whatever it is. It becomes my entertainment. And then you live in a time where there's a lot of social pressure, and people are anxious, and people are depressed, and people are fearful, and they're confused. And they're overwhelmed. And when you get stressed, one of the mechanisms, it's very easy to overeat, because when you're stressed eating, you're basically bringing fuel in for the fight or flight that's about to happen. But our stress isn't fight or flight stress, because it's not physical. There's no bears chasing us most of the time, right? We got stress, but we don't have any physical outlet for that. So we don't run like hell to escape it. We just sit and stew in our stress. And then overeating is often part of that. Now we have to be more deliberate these days than we used to be when there were no such things as white sugar and white flour and concentrated foods. Now, the other thing with inflammation, when you eat sugar cane, you get the sugar, but in the cane, there's also antioxidants. They protect you. I call them spark control. You know, you want to build a fire in your body, that's your energy. But the bigger the fire, the more sparks it throws. So that means the more spark control you need. We call those sparks free radicals, and they damage tissue. And then you get inflammation. The immune system produces inflammation because it tries to isolate whatever these sparks are and then take them down. But we don't have the antioxidants that take down the spark control. So we're going to get more inflammation. White sugar gives you inflammation. Why would white sugar give you inflammation? It's just a fuel molecule because it produces free radicals, and we don't have the balance with the antioxidants and anti-inflammatories that we need. We've had people who like lost 60 pounds in a couple of weeks, in 3 weeks, 60 pounds of overweight. They just peed it out because it was inflammation. And when you deal with the inflammation, then the tissue shrink, the water is released, and you basically pee it out through your kidneys, right? So omega-3s turn into their own spark control. Omega-3s build a really good fire in your body. So they give you lots of energy. That's why athletes do so well on it. But part of the omega-3s actually turn into antioxidants. So it is the only molecule among all of our nutrient molecules that it both gives you the fire and protects you against the sparks. Same molecule is turned into spark control in the body. 80% burned for energy, 20% turned into other molecules, including spark control and anti-inflammatory molecules. Kind of cool. That omega makes 3. Sense. Yeah, it's like, wow, who came up with that? Right?
What are your general thoughts on carbohydrates and sugars? Different people have, again, different people who are involved in the nutrition world have very different opinions and takes on this. I think even the average person knows that consuming huge amounts of processed sugar and processed carbs at this stage is not great for you. But just how bad is it? And if someone is going to consume carbohydrates, perhaps who should and who shouldn't, and what types should they consume versus which types they should avoid?
Yeah, that's about a 5-hour question. Okay, you know, if I suck back a little, you can get essential fatty acids. There are essential nutrients in oils that you need to have and you can't make. There are essential nutrients in proteins that you got to have but you can't make. So they're called essential fatty acids, essential amino acids. There are no essential carbohydrates. There is nothing.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
Thing in carbohydrates that you cannot get elsewhere. You know, they may have minerals in them and some vitamins in them, but you can get those in other places. So carbohydrates, from the perspective of essential nutrients, is the least important food on the planet. They give you energy, and if you're working hard, then that energy, you'll burn that energy. But there's nothing in them you actually have to have. So I tend to be more in the direction of eating greens, good fats, and proteins. So I eat greens, seeds, and nuts. That's where my focus is. I have no sugar in my house. I have no bread in my house. There's no white flour in my house. And I don't use any of the colorless, odorless, tasteless oils that the industry makes, because I call those the white oils. I get my oils made with health in mind, and I eat seeds and nuts.
When you say the white oils, just to be specific for clarity for the listeners, Which ones are those? I think I know what you mean by that, but
yeah, all the ones in plastic bottles that line the shelves of all the grocery stores, that are colorless, odorless, tasteless, that have been treated with sodium hydroxide, phosphoric acid, bleached, and then heated to frying temperature to clean them up. And all of that's done for shelf life. So all those shelf stable oils are, I call them white oils, except for extra virgin olive oil, which is made in a different way, if it's really extra virgin olive oil. But sometimes they cheat on the olive oil too.
When you say white oils, you mean what a lot of people would call seed oils. So your sunflower vegetable oil, and so on.
Yeah, the highly processed. A lot of people now are saying, don't use seed oils, don't use omega-6s. Mm-hmm. That's bad advice. You shouldn't use, because they're blaming omega-6s for the damage done by processing. And nobody's talking about the damage done by processing, because that's the key issue in the arena of oils and the damage that they can do. And then that's the other thing, is we get a lot of omega-6s because they're in all the seeds and oils. We don't get enough omega-3s, so we need to change the ratio of omega-3 to 6, bring in more omega-3s, and then get the omega-6s also made with health in mind. Again, that's what we do in the blend. Everything you need, right ratio, in glass, organic, no pesticides, no plastics, and made with health in mind, without that damage that gets you a million damaged molecules for every cell in your body in a tablespoon, right? So we addressed that problem 45 years ago. And most people who talk against oils haven't, it's true, the colorless, odorless, tasteless oils cause problems, but they're only telling you what's wrong. They're not telling you what's right. They haven't fixed it. We fixed it. We fixed it 45 years ago. And the people who write those books never talk to me. Not one of those people has ever talked to me. So they just talked, and they've only done half their homework. I did all the homework. That's why we found a solution for it.
I hear that. Why is frying so bad? I've heard you talk about just how terrible frying is in the way that people typically do it. So what are the dangers of fried foods? Okay.
Well, fried oils fry health. Oils are vindictive. They treat you like you treat them. If you fry them, they will fry your health. If you treat them with care, they will take care of your health. Fried foods fry health, because when you turn the food, first it goes yellow, then it goes brown, then it goes black, and then it smokes. Well, you're changing food molecules into unnatural molecules, including carcinogenic molecules. And the association between frying and inflammation, and frying increasing the risk of cancer, is well studied and is pretty well established. So why is that? Well, because these are the sensitive nutrients, the most sensitive nutrients. Light damages them. It causes free radicals. Then you get chain reactions that damage a lot of molecules. Oxygen makes them go rancid. And heat, high heat, twists the molecules and changes them and creates trans fatty acids. Lots of other problems too. And they're literally all kinds of fragmented and cyclized and double bond changed polymerized molecules. All kinds of changes in molecules happen in the frying pan. Frying is the stupidest thing we have ever invented to do to our food from the perspective of health. So what you're doing is you're damaging everything. And when you have oil in a frying pan, it's being damaged by light, by oxygen, and by high temperature all at the same time. Right. And when you overheat protein or starch or fats, all three of them increase inflammation and the risk of cancer, independent of the others. Mm. All of them do. So this is like burning food is dumb, 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 because nature's mandate was fresh, whole, raw, organic for every creature that eats in nature. Other than us, it's all fresh, whole, raw, organic. Right? We're supposed to be eating raw, right? Because there are enzymes and probiotics in raw foods, on raw foods, that improve digestion and protect you from all kinds of problems in your digestive tract.
Okay. I mean, I'm intrigued by the "we're supposed to be eating raw" statement. I mean, I know most people will eat some raw foods, certain fruits, certain vegetables,
yeah,
things like that. But yeah, as far as I know, through most of at least modern history, and in certainly every country that I've ever been to, which is a lot of them, you know, people typically like to have their food cooked and even struggle to digest things that are raw. So how does that balance out?
Well, if you're used to eating cooked foods and then you want to go raw, you have to do it gradually, because you have to rebuild your system for a different food supply. That makes sense, right? If you use it or lose it, right? That applies to digestion too. So if you're always eating cooked food, your digestive system will become weaker. And then if you're talking about meat, you know, meat is actually easier to digest raw than cooked. But most people don't eat it, except in Japan, sushi, and in Italy, prosciutto, and in Germany, they eat raw hamburger. They put raw hamburger meat with green onions, so they eat that raw. So even eating raw meat is not that strange an idea, right?
I think it's pretty strange.
Well, I guess it's what you're used to.
I mean, I know there are exceptions. I know there's, you know,
no, no, the, I guess
carpaccio and sushi, no, and things.
What I say to you then is, well, I guess that's what you're used to.
Yeah, I'm right? Definitely used to eating.
And then obviously the first time I ate sushi, I had a Japanese professor at university. So he took us out for sushi, and they brought a sashimi, which was like raw tuna in raw tuna slabs. And I looked at that and it was like, I can't believe it. They're serving us dead raw fish. Right. And so I had a really hard time with it. But I got used to it. And it's actually very easy to digest.
I love sushi. I love sushi.
So there you
I'm
go.
I'm not sold on you know, other meats eating so you them are, raw.
Right.
Obviously, there's a risk of various types of disease with that, and particularly if you're looking at things like poultry and pork.
Yeah, if the meat's contaminated, then you have to cook it to kill the bugs.
Yeah,
and the way we used to have chicken in the barnyard, they weren't polluted. The way we grow them now, you know, in close quarters with millions of other chickens, you know, and using all kinds of antibiotics, which, you know, mess up the digestive tract's immune function. You know, so if the meat is contaminated, then you can't eat it raw. That's like, you know, but why the meat's contaminated? We created that because we wanted to mass produce everything because we could make more money. So we weren't thinking about health in any of that. We were thinking about money. Right?
I think you're also thinking about billions of new human beings coming into the world and needing to be able to feed everybody.
Well, that's what they say. But I don't buy it. I know.
Fair enough.
But if you live in the city, and that's something we created. So millions of people live in cities. They don't have a plot of land where they can grow their own food. Well, yeah, then they're going to depend on somebody else doing it for them.
For right? sure. I have a question, because look, most people who are listening to this most likely do live in cities, and we're probably not going to convince them to start eating raw meat and so on. So, but what I really do want to do is meet people where they are.
Yeah.
So the average person listening to this, what are some sort of quick, practical, easy wins that they can get in terms of their nutrition, in terms of some simple changes that they can make?
Okay. So if you're going to eat your foods cooked, then what you need to do, you need to replace the digestive enzymes that are in raw food that you destroyed. You need to replace those. So you take a load off your digestive system, because your digestive system was made for raw food. When you cook them, your digestive system has to do more than twice the work. Give it the help with the digestive enzymes, replace those enzymes. Because if your digestion doesn't keep up, because you cooked it, then your immune system has to get involved. And then your immune system is not free to do its other jobs. So replace the digestive enzymes that were destroyed when foods were cooked, and replace the probiotics that were killed when the foods were cooked. So those two things will help your digestive tract. Then eat more fiber. That means plant-based.
All right, sorry, how do you do that?
Oh, you take them as supplements.
Just take
literally, I take an enzyme supplement. You take a, you know, you eat, take a capsule of enzymes, or you could open them and mix them in the food after the food is cool enough to eat. And the same thing with the probiotics, you take supplements. I brush my teeth with probiotics in the evening because your mouth needs probiotics too. When you swallow a capsule, you get benefits from your stomach down, but not from your stomach up. So I brush my teeth with them. I wake up with exponentially less severe bad breath in the morning. Nobody wants to talk about it, but we all know what that is, right?
Yeah.
Right? And it works really well. So I brush them, and then they start on top, and they go through the whole digestive tract. I use one called Super Bifido Plus, and unbelievably good. I open it on my tongue, brush my teeth with it, swallow it. I don't rinse my mouth. I want to leave them in my mouth because they outpopulate the rot bacteria in my mouth, and they steal their food, and they inhibit their growth. And the rot bacteria, because when you're sleeping, you don't swallow. So they all just eat and multiply. That's why bad breath is worse in the morning than it is any other time of the day. And then fiber, very good food for the probiotics. And then there's bitters, which are bitter herbs that help digestion and liver function. So those four, because digestion is the second most neglected area, where there are the second most problems next to missing omega-3s or damaged omega-3s. So I work with that as well. Then greens, honestly, we should be eating greens till they're coming out of our ears. You know, they call rabbit food. Yeah, that's right. Eat it till it's coming out of your ears. Why is that? Because if you look at the planet, that is the foundation of all life on the planet is green, basically green plants. So I work with that as well.
I hear that.
So those are easy things to do. So, and I'm always looking at, like, I live in the city, just like, all, you know, most people that listen to you and listen to me live in the city. I'm always looking at how was it in nature before we got civilized? And how do I duplicate that living in the city? Well, I'm not living in a tent, and I'm not sleeping under a tree. But in terms of the food that my body is made of, you know, when we kill the enzymes, we need to replace them because they're in the raw foods. The probiotics are on the raw foods. That's where a cow gets its probiotics, and why cows don't have bad breath if they're in the meadow is because they get probiotics in their mouth with every mouthful of grass they eat. So I want to duplicate that, so I replace those. And then as much raw as I can, more plant-based, because I think we've kind of made meat the thing that real people eat, right? But that's more advertising. That's not health related. That's, again, is commerce related, right? And we do, there's lots of good research that says when you eat more plant-based, you actually get improvements in both longevity and in health. So I'm not saying completely vegan, but head in the direction of more plant-based. It's also good for the planet because growing animals is pretty hard on the, can be pretty hard on the environment. And then if you're going to eat carbs, you know, beans, peas, lentils, chickpeas, they're not my favorite foods, but eat them as whole foods. So if you're going to eat carbs, don't eat white sugar, white flour, and white bread, and cake and cookies, you know, and soft drinks that are sugared, right? No, eat whole foods, grain-based, whole grains, and then legumes. Those are better sources because they have antioxidants in them, and they have anti-inflammatories in them, and they have the energy you need, and they're more balanced. What we do when we process foods, we take them out of balance. And most health problems of physical origin are the result of damage done by processing or nutrients removed by processing. Processing is the key to all the diseases of civilization.
What are some good natural sources of omega-3? Let's say there's someone who doesn't want to rely too much on supplementation, or you've got someone who is, say you even have someone like myself who travels a lot. I don't have a fixed, I don't have a fixed abode. I'm not traveling with a refrigerator where I can keep something, you know, cold and dark constantly. I'm always on the move. I might be out and about and I'm not able to cook stuff at home, whatever it is. What are some ways that I could easily boost my omega-3 without, you know, yeah, simple question. What are some ways I could easily boost my omega-3?
Yeah, I spent 15 years on the road, 6 to 9 months out of a suitcase for 15 years. So I know, the travel thing. Grind. Yeah, okay. So I at one point I took bottles with me, and then I would only, once they're open, use them up within 7 weeks. So I had bottles of Udo's oil in my hand luggage, to, you know, but then it was like a mess. And then it was like, oh yeah, you put them in the suitcase and you go on a longer trip. And if the bottle opens, you got oil all over your underwear. So I didn't, so we created capsules for that. That makes it a little easier. That's one. But the other thing that you can do, if you don't want to do capsules or oil, then you get flax seeds and you can take them whole, but then you have to chew them up. You have to break them down. So if you have a blender, if you have access to a blender, then you blend them into a shake or a smoothie. Same with sunflower and sesame seeds. Those are sunflower and sesame are sources of omega-3s that are not damaged. You want to get them organic if you can. Flax, organic. And you blend them in shakes, and then you get some of the essential fatty acids. And if you take a ratio of, you can make it at home, 5 tablespoons of flax with 3 tablespoons of sunflower and sesame together, then you get about the 2-to-1 ratio that we use. It high grades the omega-3s. You blend that into a shake, and then you're getting the ratio right as well. So that's, you know, so, and then chia seeds, but chia seeds are kind of very slippery, and they, flax is a better source. I think it's cheaper too. So flax is probably the simplest, the easiest source of getting omega-3s that are undamaged if you grind them fresh or, and you get them organic. And then you get fiber and minerals and protein in it as well.
For people who live closer to the equator, which is a large chunk of the human population, I mean, where are they getting omega-3s from, or are they just totally deficient?
No, they have omega-3s. They all have sources, and I don't know all the sources because I haven't been to all the tropical countries, but every tropical country I've been to, I've found omega-3 sources. Psyllium seed in India, kukui nut in the Pacific Islands, chia seed in southern U.S., the Tarahumara Indians.
What about parts of the Middle East or Africa? I'm thinking in particular, because my family's originally from Nigeria, and I'm just thinking in that region, what are the foods that people are getting lots of omega-3?
Okay, for one thing, everything that's green has omega-3s in it. So omega-3s are part of all green foods. I don't know. I've been to Nigeria. I was just in Lagos. I did not get out in nature, and I was not with people who knew the plants and foods of Nigeria. So I don't know for Africa, but they're everywhere. Green foods, you know, if you eat greens till they're coming out of your ears, you're going to get enough omega-3 to not die prematurely.
Okay.
And you'll probably you'll live longer than the people who are getting damaged oils in plastic bottles.
Yeah, I understand that. I think maybe to some people it sounds a little bit odd, because when you think of greens, you don't think of fat. You think of greens as being essentially fat-free foods.
Well,
so the idea that they have these omega-3s in them, I think may confuse some people.
Right, but they're not fat-free.
Yes.
Every whole food has fat in it. Fruit too. Only 0.1%, not a lot, but it has to have some fat in it. Everything does. And all greens have more omega-3 in their fat than omega-6s. Fruit, not so much.
What about fruit? We haven't spoken about fruit. I mean, you talked about sugars and carbohydrates, and there will be some people who are out there thinking, well, what about fruit or different types of fruit? What's your personal thoughts on that?
I have a saying, you know, there's a saying, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. I added another part to that. Is the second apple brings him back unless you throw the apple at him to keep him away.
Okay, right? Interesting. Tell me more. Right?
Well, because sugar has fruit has sugar in it. Again, if you're physically very active and you're pumping out a lot of energy, you can get away with eating a lot of carbohydrates because you're burning it. If you're sedentary, you gotta maybe back off on it. And the fruits that we had in nature, a lot of them were tart, sometimes bitter, sometimes sour, not a lot of sugar in them. We've fattened, we've bred the apples to be big and full of sugar. We've done it with pears, we've done it with prunes. So we have more sugar in our fruit than used to be in nature. So you got to keep that in mind. So what fundamentally, if I eat 3 apples a day, I put on weight. So I have to deliberately limit that. Mm-hmm. Right. So I limit. So that's why I say for me, greens and or raw vegetables, because they can be yellow and orange too, right? And red. So vegetables, low fat vegetables, and seeds and nuts. That's like for me, that's the focus. And then spices. I use a lot of spices because spices have unbelievable health benefits. Like we're talking about turmeric. Turmeric is probably the best spice on the planet. Black seed, which comes from the Middle East. Ginger and ashwagandha and amla and cayenne. And clove is a very, very good spice because it has antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, anti-cancer, anti-diabetes, anti-cardio, anti-cholesterol. I mean, some of the spices, it's just anti-everything that's bad for you. And then antioxidants and anti-inflammatory, which is good for you. So that's what it looks like. I do eat some fruit, usually maybe a little bit in the morning. And I drink matcha tea, matcha turmeric tea. So I'm paying attention. I'm a kind of person who said, look, if I know it's healthy for me, I'll eat it. I don't care what it tastes like. And there are a lot of people who say, I don't care how good it is for me. If it doesn't taste good, I won't eat it. Well, I'm noticing that I'm living longer than most of the people who talk like that. So I'm 81. I'm going to be 82 in May. And so far I'm still firing on a couple of cylinders at least.
And we're glad that you are.
And it makes a difference. And it does make a difference. There's no question about it that if something is wrong in your body, raise your standard for food, water, and air intake, and get a little exercise. It's not that complicated. Raise your standard. You want better results, you got to raise your standards, right?
That's important for people to hear because I don't think people don't hear that message enough these days.
Yeah, it's true in athletics. It's just as true in nutrition. Raise your standard. If something goes wrong with your body, it's because you have a very good genetic program and your life loves you unconditionally, right? 24/7. So you're doing something that you need to change. And it's usually right here at your mouth. Raise your standard for what you put in, because then life will build you a better body. But life depends on you for the input. So that's the only thing you have to do. After you swallow it, it's not in your control anymore. Then life is doing what it can with what you gave it to do. Give it something better. Absolutely. You want something better, give it something better to work with.
I do have a question, which I think would be, it's a common question in nutrition circles. And this is about saturated fats versus unsaturated fats. And also perhaps they're connected, but also how do animal fats fit into all of these conversations and ideas?
Okay, let's start with the saturated fats. Saturated fats will make your platelets more sticky, which takes you towards heart disease, heart attack. And they make you more insulin resistant, which takes you towards diabetes. But the kicker is omega-3s. Hello, omega-3s again. Omega-3s make you more insulin sensitive. So they take you away from diabetes. And they make your platelets less sticky. So they take you away from a heart attack. And the saturated fats are being blamed for the potential of these problems only when you're omega-3 deficient. So we should be blaming sticky platelets and insulin resistance on omega-3 deficiency. Because when you optimize your omega-3s, then the saturated fats are not a danger anymore. That's really interesting.
Yeah, that's very important for people to understand that.
Yeah, and when the research is done, they never put it in context. You know, saturated fats cause you problems in a context. The sad American diet, the standard American diet in that context. But if you get the diet put together right and you get all your essential nutrients, then the saturated fats don't have that problem. Okay.
Are there omega-3s in any animal fat sources?
Oh, sure. In the high fat cold water fish and in fish, seals, of course, yeah. And seals and whales and even polar bears. But nobody's eating polar bears on a regular basis, or whales for that matter, right? But yeah, they're there.
They're a bit tricky. Okay.
Yeah, they're there because there's omega-3 in their diet, and actually, it's in the ocean. It's actually algae that make most of the omega-3s, and then then something eats the algae. Krill eat the algae, so they get omega-3s from algae, and then a little fish eats the krill, and it gets the omega-3s from the krill. And the big fish eats a little fish, and the whale eats the big fish. So the omega-3s make their way through the entire food chain, but they're made at the base of it by algae.
Are there any omega-3s in commonly eaten land animals?
I'm thinking.
I know they're in cold water fish.
Yeah. Okay. Like the ungulates, so like elk, deer, moose, muskox, they actually damage the omega-3s in their stomach. Bacteria in their stomach damage them. So they're low in omega-3s. But horses, those kind of animals, horses, zebras, they're omega-3 animals.
We need to start eating more horses and zebras.
There are people who eat them.
I've eaten both.
Yeah, yeah, I have too. When we were refugees after the war, we got horse meat sent from the U.S. In canned horse meat. So we ate horse meat as kids. It was sent by the Red Cross.
Interesting.
Okay, now going to animal fats. The big issue with animal fats is not the fat itself, but the whole way we raise the animals. So if you have a moose, the fat is pretty good, you know, because all it's doing is eating grass and bark and whatever it's eating, right? But we're pumping antibiotics, hormones, pesticides into the foods the animals eat. And if they're fat soluble, they will end up in the fat part of the meat. And so from that perspective, animal fats tend to be more saturated, less omega-6, less omega-9, especially in beef and lamb, chicken, mostly omega-6. Pork will have omega-3s in it if there's omega-3s in the diet. But if you put too much omega-3 in pork food, then the pork tastes rancid because the omega-3s, when you cut the meat and it's hanging there, oxygen turns the omega-3s rancid. So again, this is it's a sensitivity of the molecule kind of problem. So from that perspective, plant-based fats are preferable, especially if you get them organic, and it's easier to get organic plants than organic animals. But if the animal is in an organic place, then you know then the fat in the animal product is not going to be as toxic as the way we usually get it. And you know, I always have to say, look, this is what human beings have done to their own food supply. This is what we have done to our own food supply. If you expect it to change, you need to change it. You know, if I want it to be different, I need to do something to change it. One of the ways to do that is spend your money on organic, because then you're taking money away from people who put pesticides in your meat, and you're giving it to someone who's growing your meat clean. So do what you can. You know, if you can't do that 100%, well, then do a 10%. But do what you can. Do something. Do a little bit of something. You want to change this planet to something better? You know, if 8 billion people each did one little thing better once a month, would it be a lot of change on this planet? And we're living in a time when we really need to think about that.
Absolutely. I think that's also a really important message. Before we close out, I'm just remembering, I actually had a question I did want to ask earlier when we were on the topic of frying. And I did want to ask if there are any exceptions to that. You talked about frying being the worst invention that we ever made for food. But are there any oils that can be used for frying? Are there some exceptions to it, or is it just?
I am so glad you asked that question. I call that the Russian roulette question, because the Russian roulette question is, what can I get away with? And the truth is, you don't get away with anything.
Okay.
Right? It doesn't matter what you use. You're gonna burn the food, and you're creating toxicity. You're gonna burn. The least damage is done if you cook in hard fats, because they're the most stable, they're the least sensitive, they have the least essential nutrients, but they sustain the least damage as well. So, but if you're eating saturated fats, you still got to make sure that you get your essential fatty acids from somewhere else. And the more saturated fats you eat, the more of the essential fatty acids you're going to need. But the Russian roulette question, you know, is, well, let's see, you know, I'll point the gun at my head. There's only one bullet in one of the six chambers, you know, and so Russian roulette is completely safe unless the hammer hits the chamber with the bullet in it, right? So you don't get away with anything. So, and I call it the Russian roulette question. I always say, you know, we should ask a better question. What is the better question? What do I need to put in place in order to have the healthiest, longest, most fulfilling life that is possible for me to have, given what I've been given. So that's the positive question. What are the steps I need to take for better health?
Yeah, I hear that. Look, the way I look at these things as well, as someone who myself talks a lot about fitness and, you know, nutrition as well, but I focus more on fitness and strength training and stuff like that, is I think a lot about meeting people where they are. So we're currently in a situation where 70% of people are overweight and obese. They're eating in America, they're eating the SAD, the standard American diet. They're eating all sorts of fried food and processed food and all sorts of garbage. Just understanding human psychology, I doubt that they will read a book or listen to a podcast and they're suddenly going to go completely raw and primarily plant-based, and they're going to drop all the fried food and all the processed stuff and so on. So I'm trying to think of, okay, from that perspective, what are some of the small to moderate changes that they can make where they don't need to feel like they're giving up on all of the foods that they enjoy and all of those little pleasures, and, you know, they go to a party and they can't eat anything because it's got seed oils or it's fried or it's this or that. So I'm trying to think about what some of those sort of micro strategies are in the greater macro.
Yeah, and I completely understand that. And, you know, for all of the people who are overweight, you know, pointing out that it's better to ask a health question than a Russian roulette question is one little step in the right direction, right? Because it's, you know, when we have insights, I've noticed that when I have insights, you know, something, the penny drops, you know, I have a flash of understanding. When I have an insight, I own the insight. And I work on that insight. If you tell me, do this and do that, you say, oh, well, that's just you talking, right? And I say, oh, yeah, whatever. It's like, but when I have the insight and I get it, all of a sudden, I have the power to make the change. So what are the insights that we need to, you know, and sometimes it's good just to sit down and get really quiet, really, really, really quiet as you, as still as you can. You know, and just what comes to you in understanding about your life and how to live it. And then when you have that insight, then you can put it in practice, because it's your insight, you own it.
Dr. Udo Erasmus, man, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. As I said, I've been hearing your name for well over two decades. I know that in the bodybuilding and powerlifting world, actually, A lot of people over the years have recommended the, you know, the Udo's Choice oil. So I've heard about it. I've bought several bottles myself over the years. I would love to travel with it, but I've tried it once and it got a bit messy.
At home, use the bottled oil, and you know, at some point, maybe we should do something on total health and human nature.
No doubt, absolutely. Yeah. But I'm very grateful for all the work you've done over the decades, and for all the people that you've helped. It's so important, I think, now more than ever, because we just live in such an unhealthy time. So I just want to give you your flowers, as they say.
Yeah,
so
I appreciate thank you. And my flowers, you know, it is a labor of love. When I found out that omega-3s could help 99% of the population, I went ballistic. I said, oh my God, we could help so many people. And it feels really good when you help, you know, feels good in your heart when you help. That's what drove this whole project. It wasn't about money. I had no business background. You know, it was like, oh my God, we could help so many people. That was the driver. And I came out of the war, right? So I'm always thinking, you know, we could live better than we do. What can I do? What can I do to get as many people as possible in that direction?
That's a good life philosophy. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
All right. Thank you.